Hi, it's let's see, Wednesday afternoon. Yeah. And I want to talk about the current situation in the Middle East, especially with the Druze and everything. There's a lot to say in all this, but I'll confine my remarks to some degree. This is being sponsored by Mars Friedman, Dr. Mo, as he said, was Chris Fushlin Paul didn't need, especially in Israel. So I know he joins me, you know, with especially the wounded and the maimed and the PTSD people. They really need a Rafua Shlema. If you're following the news at all, which I'm sure you are if you're listening to this podcast, so you know Israel's getting little by little involved in a war in Syria over the Druze. Most people don't know who the Druze are. They are Arab, but they're not Muslim. And that's the key point. They're like a Shabtai Tzvi breakoff from Shabtai Tzvi. So you can call them the Frankists, except that the Frankists were perverts and the Druze are not. It's very complicated, but I think most listeners know that the Muslims are divided into the Sunni and the Shia. And this has to do with certain things that happened back in the 600s, actually. Okay? And which leads to different theologies within Islam. And they care. The same way any religion, you know, the smallest difference provokes a violent reaction. So, you know, the Orthodox are angry at Reform and Conservative, something like that. And once upon a time, the Misnagdim are angry at the Hasidim, and so forth and so on. So if that's true in a small, we imagine it much bigger within the Islamic context. So 1,000 years ago, a certain group developed out of the Shiaism. At that time, the rulers of Egypt were Shia, the Fatimids, the Fatimas. They were Shiite rulers. They were later... Egypt today is not a Shia country. The opposite, it's a major, major Sunni country with 100 million Sunnis. That's because of Saladin. You understand? In other words, when he came in, you know, the guy from the Crusades or the employer of the Rambam, when he took over Egypt and he had this prime minister named Al-Fadil, said he switched everything back to Sunni. So if you want to know how countries in the Middle East got the way they are, it's never bottom up, it's always top down. Some ruler or powerful figure, he imposed religion on the people. For example, Iran used to be a Sunni country, but in the early 1500s, around then, a little earlier maybe, a certain dynasty made them all Shiites, the Safavid dynasty. So I know it doesn't interest everybody so much, but that's the basic facts. So out of the Shiites, they developed into different schools also. I'm not going to give you a whole Torah on the Shiaism. But, and a break off from one of those, from the Ismailis, became what you and I today call the Druze. And they have their own Mesorah and their own religion that they developed. And it has to do, you know, like many of these groups, it's syncretic, syncretistic. There are pieces of Christianity in it, pieces of Islam in it, a little bit of Judaism, a little bit. And everybody always says that they have their prophet is Yisro. They have a bunch of prophets, and it doesn't say Yisro. They say they have a prophet who was a Kohen of Midian. So maybe it was Yisro, you know what I mean? But it doesn't matter. What matters is that the Sunni Muslims consider them over the Avodah Zarah, heretics, worse than anything, like Shabtai Tzvi, like Frankism, and therefore they're all Chayv Misa. Maybe they can convert and do Tshuva. I don't know Islam well enough to know that Nakuda. Probably they could. But if they can't, they're Chayav Misa. Now, easier said than done. They start out in Egypt, but eventually, because of persecution, they moved to what you and I today call northern Israel, or that whole area. And there's about 1 million, maybe 1.5 million Druze in the whole world. That's why, you know, they don't, they're not a threat to anybody. They're very small numbers. And they live, you know, in Lebanon, Syria, and Israel. I mean, that's basically where they all live. And a small group in Jordan. But basically, that's the area. So Israel is a chalik of them. And Lebanon has a chalik. And Syria is a chalik. Syria has the biggest chalik. If I'm not mistaken, about half the Druze in the world live in Syria. Okay? Now, they already long ago, because of the Muslim attacks and they wanted to kill them, they kind of ended up moving to the mountains. So like in the Galil and in Lebanon and in Syria, the Jebel of Druze is the mountain of Druze. Because it's easier to defend yourself in the mountains. And they became tough because they had to be. They learned self-defense because they had to. And down the ages, you know, the Druze were known for being fighters. Because if they didn't, you'd die. It's a tough neighborhood. And if the Muslims could, they would kill them. So that's their history, okay? Especially they had interesting outcome in Lebanon and the Ottoman Empire, but I'm not going to go into that. Suffice it to say that by the time the current borders were drawn in the Middle East, and the current borders are kind of artificial, they were drawn up by the British and the French. So who made the borders of Lebanon? Who made the borders of Israel or Palestine? Who made the borders of Jordan or of Syria or Iraq? They're kind of artificial. They never existed before. And the British and the French did it after the First World War. And these borders are still there today. Okay? A lot of the Arabs, especially the very firm ones, resent that. And the ISIS and Al-Qaeda and all these other guys say, let's do away with all the borders and bring one big Arab state and an empire, a caliphate under the caliph. They also throw into it that it should be super frum and all the rest of it. And therein lies a problem, because if you're a very frum Muslim, then the Sunni, the Druze are chayiv misa. I want to make that clear, okay? They're chayiv misa for apikorsis and for minus and for this, that, and the other. That's how the Muslims, the Sunni, that's how they see it, okay? Now, today, the Druze have been living, let's say, for example, since 1948. I won't go before that. Some in Israel, some in Lebanon, and some in Syria. It's always delicate. The ones that live in Lebanon, well, Lebanon is a hodgepodge. There are Sunnis. There are a lot of Christians over there. The Maronite Christians is a big group. You have Shiites. And so the Druze are just one of many. All right? There are others also, the Alawites. So the Druze are one of many. And the way Lebanon was, let's say, for example, from 1948 to 1975, everybody didn't fight each other. But in starting 1945 in Lebanon, you had a civil war, and they all fought each other. And it became like the mafia, like the Godfather. You know, Group A knocks out Group B, and vice versa. I can't go into all that. But the Druze had to be tough and develop their own militias and all this, that, and the other. And the question is, you know, are they going to side with Team A? Are going to side with Team B? They're a small minority. Whoever they decide with, they're taking a chance. Because what if that side loses and what if the other side comes for them? You understand? I don't blame them. You know, I'm not Druze, but I don't blame them. When you're a small group living in an Arab tough neighborhood and everybody has revenge for something that you did wrong to them, it ain't easy, right? If the Druze had their way, I'm sure they would like to be on a desert island all by themselves, nobody else, and just do their own thing and have their own religious rituals and all that kind of business. But they ain't. They're stuck in the Middle East a bunch of others. So that's always what happened in Lebanon. And down to the present day, the Druze are a force in Lebanon. And they have their own militias and guns and this and that and the other. And they have to. And they try, their leaders, as best I can see, to kiss up to the Arabs and the Muslims as much as is possible. So they're always damning Israel. You know, let's put it this way. Why not? That gets you a little bit of creds. You know, with the other Muslims. You understand? At least you're anti-Israel. You're on our side. Now, are they really? Who cares? As long as you say the right thing, they can't have any tainas in you. Let's say, for example, the Druze in Lebanon said, we like Israel. Oh, my goodness. The others would check them. Or they would try to. So why would you say that you like Israel? I'm not saying they do like Israel. I'm saying, why would you say that? It's much easier, much smarter to say you're anti-Israel. You get it? So in other words, the positions that people take in the Middle East have to be pragmatic. Just sometimes that's the way it is. Once upon a time, it was like that with the Jews. When we didn't have a country, we're a minority in another country, what if there was a machlokas between the Sunni and the Shia? Who did the Jews side with? What if there's fights between the Catholics and the Protestants in Northern Ireland? Who did the Jews side with? What if there's a machlokas between different ethnic groups in Algeria or Morocco? Who did the Jews side with? That's an uncomfortable thing. You don't want to choose sides, because either way, you make an enemy. You get it? This is the curse of being a small minority. That's why the Zionist movement started that Israel should be its own country. It shouldn't have to have that kind of junk. But the Druze don't have a country, and they've never tried to, because they're not large. I think at the most is 1.5 million, and probably not even that. You hear what I said? In the whole world, it's 1.5 million. The Jews are big compared to the Druze. You understand? It's a small group. Now, what about Syria? Well, the truth is, the French created Syria because of one big blob in the Middle East. And then the French detached Lebanon from Syria, made it a separate country. so that the Christians, who were a big group in Lebanon, would have a Christian country. It hasn't worked out pashut at all, but that's what Lebanon is. So it's all kind of artificial, and the Druze there are the Druze there. But what about in Syria? So Syria was the rest of the French mandate. That whole area you and I call Syria today is created by the French. It became a country in 1945. It's not that old. It never existed before in history. There's never in history been a country called Syria. Just like there's never in history been a country called Lebanon. There has in history been a country called Israel, but there's never been a country called Lebanon. There's never been a country in history called Syria. There's never been a country in history called Iraq. There's never been a country in history called Jordan. Now, there has been a country called Egypt. Do you see how it goes? It depends how new you are, how old you are, and how do you try to push your agenda. So the Syria, when it was set up, was supposed to be like a secular Arab state, although the majority is Muslim. And they never had stability, and one dictator took over after another and all the rest of it. And the CIA got involved, to be honest, and the Russian KGB got involved. It's a whole kinds of mess, okay? Plus, the Syrians hate Israel from day one. From day one, it's like bread into their bones. Hate, hate, hate Israel, okay? So they backed the Palestinians, although really, 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 if you're a Syrian Lishitoso, Palestine doesn't exist either. And once you kick the Jews out or kill them, then you'll really annex Palestine to Syria. That's the way they see it. You understand? But that's a secular thing, right? That's a secular conception of Syria. And all the dictators of Syria were part of that secular business. So the last two that we remember was Assad's father and Assad's son. Hafez al-Assad was there from 1970 to 2000, and the son was there from 2000 to last year, the 2024, Peanut. And they were secular. So, and that made all the Frum Muslims hate them also. So from the point of view of Frum Sunni Muslims, Assad and all the people that worked for them, father and son, were Chai Misa. And they tried to kill him a bunch of times. He was a pretty savage guy himself. And so he did massacres of whole cities and stuff like that against them. And that's called Syria. Over there, they call it Tuesday. I spoke about this before, but the Druze, under all these secular states, tried to hold their head above water. And sometimes the governments let them alone, and sometimes not. Now, theoretically, if it's a secular state, Syria, everybody's a Syrian citizen, and whatever your personal religion is your business. So you have a Christian who's a Syrian, and a Muslim who's a Syrian, and a Druze who's a Syrian, and a Kurd who's a Syrian. But the peoples didn't see it that way. And from time to time, the Syrian state attacked the Druze, right? The Syrian state, the secular state. What's happening now in Israel is not the first time it's happened. I'll tell you something I'm sure nobody knows. And that is, except some really wonk, policy wonk. And that is, back in 1954, the same thing that you have today happened. I happen to have, thanks to my book friends, like Ariel Ben Chaim Meir and the others, I have some of the Moshe Sharet stuff, including his personal diary that was published and translated in English. And Moshe Sharet was the second prime minister of Israel. A real chiloni, super guy and all the rest of it. Very intelligent, interesting person. And he pours all of his secrets into his diary, which were published by his son after his death and now put into English. And here I am looking at February 1st, 1954. And here's Moshe Sharet, who is the prime minister of Israel, as well as the foreign minister. It's after Ben-Gurion retired for a while, temporarily. And he says that his aide, Gideon, Raphael, came to report, I'm reading, on the unrest among the Israeli Druze. This is February of 1954. Gideon came to report on the unrest among the Israeli Druze due to the Syrian president's persecution of their brothers in Syria, which has been agitating the Jebel Druze. Huh? The exact same thing? There are rumors about the imprisonment of the Druze leader Sultan El Atrash and the bombing of Druze villages. Huh? The same thing? And we're talking 71 years ago. Our Druze in Israel are furious, he's writing in his diary. On the one hand, they rejected Moshe Dayan's proposal that the IDF enlist and equip saboteurs among them. So Israel said to the Druze at that time, we'll arm you, you go in and fight the Syrians who are attacking your brothers. But they didn't want to do that. On the other hand, the Druze here in Israel say they are willing to give their blessing to an Israeli invasion of Syria to capture and liberate the Jebel Druze enclave, but are unwilling to take any risks themselves. Huh? The same thing? The same thing as today? So what do they say? Plus ça change, plus le même chose, like the French say. The more things change, the more they stay the same. They have organized, the Druze, he's writing here in 1954, have organized rallies and demonstrations in their villages. A delegation of their elders and notables would like to speak with me, the Prime Minister. Their representatives in the Knesset are willing to speak from the podium if I approve of it. We concluded that there is no harm in that, and if they should appear, I would respond. Meanwhile, it became clear we do not know exactly what's happening on Druze Mountain in Syria and in Syria generally, because at that time Israel had no spies in Syria. As at the time of trial, we have discovered a serious flaw in our intelligence, meaning Moshe Shred is saying it's taka bad. Israel has no spies and no information coming from, Syria. The two Druze Knesset members, Israel at that time, not today, had stooges. There was the Mapai party, that was Ben-Gurion party and Shred's party. But there were one or two Arab parties that officially are Arab parties, but really were stooges for the Mapai. That's how it worked in those days, because there was a military government in Israel, don't ask, for the Arabs. And so these Knesset members who really are Meshuvah to the Mapai party, two of them came to see me. They appealed to the president's precedents in the Knesset, which intervened on behalf of Jews that disenfranchised of the rights in other countries. In other words, the Druze asked me, Moshe Shred, hey, Israel protests and does stuff when Jews are threatened, so the Druze of Israel have persecuted brethren in Syria, and they're appealing to the Israeli government and to the Knesset for succor, for help. What can be done? Okay? Hakumat Israel Akbar, he says. The government of Israel knows better. I promised them my sympathy and appeal to the great powers. Now, he doesn't want to do it, because in 1954, it would have been very bad for Israel, during the circumstances of that time, to invade Syria. In the evening, I returned to the Knesset with the opening of the session. The Druze Chaver Knesset, Sheikh Jaber Muadi, was given the floor. He protested strongly against atrocities perpetrated on the Druze, and he called for Israeli help. He poured abuse on the head of the Syrian president, Shishakli, and he declared that the Druze of Israel would not stand idly by. That's baloney. This was a blunt and groundless assertion, which needlessly endangers the Druze of the Syrian parts, says our writer. And with the Hebrew translation the speech was made, I took the floor and spoke briefly with caution. I limited myself to an expression of sympathy for the freedom-loving Druze nation, which has succeeded in retaining its religious national identity, and for the members in Israel, to whom the state owed a great deal for their loyalty in time of need. After all, it was they and not we whose kin were hostages in the hands of the tyrant of Damascus. Why should we surrender them to him as a fifth column of the Zionists? Meaning, Moshe Shred says, if we invade to help the Druze, the Arabs will say all the Druze are Chayav Misa because they're friends of Israel. This is exactly what's going on now. Now, to carry this story forward, the Syrian government had so much trouble in its hands in the last 50 years from the extremist Muslims that, relatively speaking, they left the Druze alone. It's not entirely true, but relatively speaking, if you're Druze and lived in Syria, you could keep your Druze religion and your culture and all that kind of business and stay in your area, swayed, as they call it, in the southern part of Syria. You know, in other words, it's as good as you could get in Syria. However, recently the Assad government has been overthrown, which is a good thing for Israel. But I'm not sure about that. Nobody's sure about that. Are the new guys going to be good for Israel or not? The new guys are this guy, al-Jolani, al-Shara. And as we all know, he's being rehabilitated by Donald Trump and the others. And the truth is, he has indicated for a long time he's willing to make a peace with Israel under certain circumstances. For Syria to make a peace with Israel is unbelievable. I talked about that in the past. The opportunity there is extraordinary. It would freak out the Arab world. She'en kamohu. I don't know how he can do that. And the reason I say it is because he's the leader of the extremist Sunnis, of the Al-Qaeda type guys, of the ISIS type guys. That's who his followers are. And many of them are like from other parts of the world that came there just to fight for fanatical Islam. That is who they are. They make no bones about it. And they all want to say that we want to come and wipe out the Jews and take over Yerushalayim and liberate Palestine and so on and so forth. They say this all the time. So how can it be that this guy is acting very differently? Now, it's possible on the following basis. This is just me, my opinion, as always. They hate the Shiites so much, and they hate the Alawites and the other stuff so much, that they say we're willing to make peace with Israel, so I'll have a free hand to wipe out the others. I get it. The problem goes as follows. Suppose they succeed. So suppose the guys who run Syria now, I'm just making this up, kill all the Shiites in Syria, and kill all the Alawites in Syria, and kill all the Christians in Syria, which they're doing, and kill all the Kurds and the Druze. You hear what I said, the Druze? Let's just say they do that. To them, that would be a kiyum of a mitzvah asay in Islam, and it would be, what's the right word? You know, lo sechay kol neshama, and yitamu rishayim in ours, because to them, all these non-Muslims are rishayim. That's how they define it. They wouldn't be interested in killing Jews because there aren't any Jews. If the Jews were there, they would kill them too. Islam is officially not against Jews living as Jews. That's true. And it's a very tricky kind of business. What I mean is, theoretically, and listen to this closely, theoretically, in Islam, even this frumest Islam, whoever is not a Muslim is chayav misa, except for the Jews and the Christians. But the Jews and the Christians can remain Jews and Christians only if they accept to be third-class citizens. They have to be very distinctly inferior in a whole bunch of ways. It's called the Pact of Omar. And in the history of Islam, sometimes they have allowed this, and other times they said, the heck with it, let's just kill them. I'm not a Muslim, so I don't know how they work out their halakhic principles in terms of letting the Jews and the Christians stay alive. But the new group in Syria has issued a constitution just unilaterally, and the constitution says that Syria recognizes the legitimacy of all divine religions. Now, you have to understand, that's an Islamic term. Divine religions means those religions which, according to the Quran, have some connection with God. They're just a little screwed up. The Hainu, Judaism and Christianity. In other words, from the Islamic point of view, the Jews are monotheists. They've messed it up. The Christians are monotheists. They've just messed it up. And so they're krum. But at least they do believe in one God. So therefore, they're not chayiv misa for such. But every other group in the world is chayiv misa. That's how it works. So Hindu and Buddhist and this and that and the other. And certainly the Shabtai Tzvi type groups, like the Druze, you understand? And the Shiites, if you want to get down to it. And the Ismailis, and one a group after another, and certainly all the different religions in Africa and in Asia and all the rest of it, if it's biyadom, they will either force them to convert to Islam or they'll kill them. Because that's what the religion teaches. And just go on memory and one of these things, you'll see one of the preachers saying this all the time. They make no bones about it. So if the Muslims took over America, I'm talking about theoretically, the Christians can live. And the Jews can live, although they'd have to be inferior. They would have no rights. But not the Hindus. You know, what's his name? The vice president, married to Indian. Vance, right? Not her religion. You understand? And, you know, not the American Indians. And so on and so forth. These are the rules of the game over there. And if you don't like the rules, don't be in the Middle East. That's how it goes. But the Druze are stuck in the Middle East. So the new group that's taking over Syria, as best as I can tell, as best as an observer can tell, seems to be following a policy in which first things first and second things second. So in order for first things to be first, we have to clear Syria from all those who are chayav misa. Right? And let's say we do that. Either we kill them or we chase them out of the country so they won't be there. And by the time it's over, Syria will be a pure country. The only people left in Syria will be from Muslims the way we define Islam. So it won't be any Shiites, and it won't be any other group, including there won't be no Druze. Now, how do you do that? You kill them, or you forcibly convert them. Or you do a combination. You kill the men and carry off the women, and the women become like concubines, and they're forced to live with Islam, and when they have children, when they have babies, which you you know, have by them, whether they like it or not, those babies are raised by from Muslims, and, you know, they join the team. It's always worked in the history of Islam very well, I'm sorry to say. You know, that's how they do business over there, and it's always worked very well. So the Druze therefore face the danger in Syria of being exterminated. Either physically exterminated, lo sechai kol neshama, that's very possible, and it's by no means opposed to their ideology, or a combination. You kill the men, maybe some will convert. The women and the children, you carry off and make them slaves, and by the time it's over, they're Muslims also. You understand? So in other words, Druzism will be all over. This is the situation the Druze face in Syria. The third country they live is in Israel. Obviously, in Israel, nobody's bothered the Druze since 1948. The Jews aren't trying to convert them. The Druze religion long ago had to adopt the policy of they don't accept converts. Otherwise, the Sunni Muslims in the Middle East in the 1200s, 1300s, 1400s would go nuts and would even invade them in the mountains and kill them all. So in order to, what's the right word, you know, alleviate the hatred a little bit, to palliate the extreme fear, the Druze always had to say like this: listen, we're not looking for any converts and we don't accept any. You can't convert to our religion. You have to be born in the Druze. So we're not taking anybody away from Islam. You understand? Now, if you're Muslim, either you buy into that or you don't. But I'm just saying, since that is the Druze halacha, and moreover, since there's only a million of them, if that, they've never tried to have a country, they're too small. So the Druze always had the policy in their history that the best situation is to be under a tolerant ruler. Won't be our country, but they'll leave us alone. Well, Israel fits the bit. Israel fits the bill. Ever since 1948, the state of Israel has said, we got the Druze living in the Galil. Do your thing. Just join. Don't join the Arabs against us. That's all the Jews say. Don't join the PLO to kill us. Don't join the enemy to hurt us. And Kal v'chomer, if you join us against them, we definitely will leave you alone. And the Druze made a decision in 1948, and it took 10 years for this to sink in, to be perfectly honest. But, you know, and there was a little bit of friction in terms of drafting the Druze into the army. At the beginning, they didn't want to do it, but at the end, it happened. And once it happened, ever since then, the Druze are part of the Israeli army, as you know. And they've been very good soldiers, and they're generals and stuff like that in the Israeli army. So if I'm Druze, and I live in a Druze place, I don't have to worry about the Jews. They're not to get me at all. And Israel probably has a fairly decent economy. And, you know, I can interact with whoever I want. So if I'm Druze and I live in the Galil, which is where they live, I have to be more afraid of my next-door neighbors in a lot of these villages, because the next-door neighbors are Muslim, Arab Muslim, Palestinian Muslims, and they, Taco, will always dream of killing me, or my children, or my grandchildren one day, or their grandchildren. Now, as I know how it works, a Druze will say, one day, in one situation or another, they'll rise up and kill us, or try to. You understand? I think I told you last time that I spoke about this, that, who was it, Monte Kedar, somebody, but not only from him, that when Israel looked like it had trouble back in the Yom Kippur War, the Arab Muslims in these villages were already talking out loud among themselves, okay, Israel's going down the tubes, we'll take over, and we're going to kill the Druze and take their houses. I get this house on Liberty Road, and you get that house on, Park Heights. And so, but that's how they talked. And the Druze heard this. The Druze heard these conversations. Now, Israel won the war, but I'm just saying, they're very well aware what would happen if the PLO ever won. You get it? So the Druze have never screamed loud, to hell with the Palestinians, but that's how they feel. You understand? But they're smart enough not to say it so much out loud. This is why, a couple of years ago, if you remember, Israel passed a Jewish state law or something like that. This was pushed by the right wing in Israel, because the left wing in Israel is trying to make Israel a secular state of all its citizens and try to make it un-Jewish. This is like a woke position, like Haaretz and all that, to say the Arabs are complete citizens, full citizens like everybody else, and the state of Israel should change its flag from the Magen David, and the state of Israel should change the Hatikva, which is a very Jewy type of anthem, you know, to something that's, you know, for all citizens. In other words, like an Obama type approach. And this provoked the Likud and the Mizrahi and other parties, and so they passed a bill under Bibi that said, we just want you to know, we're saying officially Israel is a Jewish state, meant for the Jewish people. The others are also okay here, and they have civil rights, but it's a Jewish state. And let me tell you something. Who protested and felt very hurt by this? The Druze. I remember this. What are you talking about? 5 years ago? Something like that. Right? And I'm going to tell you, the Israelis on the right wing, like the Likud, said to the Druze, we don't mean you. Right? When we say this is a Jewish state, we're not out to hurt you. We're out to protect ourselves from the Palestinians. You, we like. So in other words, if it was just Israel, Jewish, and the Druze, we wouldn't even pass this law. Because you are no threat to us whatsoever. We like you. We want to get along with you. And when we say Israel is a Jewish state, it's not La Fuke the Druze. Right? You guys are great. You know, no problem. Keep doing your thing. Now, you find this funny situation. So if you're Druze, the ideal country has always been Israel. As a matter of fact, if you know what's happening, since 1948, the Druze only marry each other. There are no converts. So if you're a Druze boy, let's say living in Israel, where do you get a girl? And maybe there aren't enough girls around to marry. And so they've always been sneaking girls over the border from Lebanon and from Syria to marry Israeli Druze boys. And Israel, you know, like knew it and whatever, you know, they turned a blind eye and so on and so forth. And the chutz from that, all the Druze around the world, meaning all of the Middle East, know that the ones in Israel have it the best, right? Because they are mamish not bothered at all. So the Lebanon Druze know it secretly. They won't talk about it. The Syrian Druze know about it. But the Druze talk among each other. And so, like I say, they sneak over the border. They bring brides and girls and things like that. So they have communication. So they know what's going on. But they're afraid to say anything positive about Israel because the Arabs will kill them. And it's interesting, on the Golan Heights, which Israel occupies since 1967, there are Druze. If you remember, the fighting that messed up Hezbollah started when Hezbollah threw a rocket in Majd al-Shams, which is a city on the a community on the Golan Heights, which is Druze, and it landed in a football field or a soccer field and killed a bunch of Druze kids. Remember that? And next day, Israel wiped out Nasrallah. The Druze on the Golan Heights have always been in a very tight, funny situation. They've never had it as good as they've had it since 1967, but they've always been scared out of their minds that if Israel, in negotiations, ever gives back the Golan Heights, which has been on the table forever, Israeli governments have negotiated in the past to return the Golan Heights to Syria in exchange for a full and complete peace treaty. It didn't happen. But I remember Yitzhak Rabin tried to do that, and I think Ehud Olmert tried to do that. So if you're Druze, this is your life now. And if the Assad regime would come back and take over Golan Heights, they'll kill everybody that was ever friendly to Israel. So they're always terrified. They would like it. Let me put it this way. Suppose tomorrow, I'm just pretending, Syria and Israel do make peace, like this guy Al-Jalani and Israel. Let's just say it happens. And Israel gets to keep permanently its chalik of the Golan. Then the Druze there will all say, "Kol ba'levav tepnima nefesh Yehudi homi." They'll be glad, right? Because we're putter from the Arabs. So it's very complicated. Now, part of the new Syrian regime is that they talk out of both sides of their mouth. On the one hand, in order to get support from America and elsewhere, which they've gotten from Trump, they say we're pro-American. And we're anti-Iran, which is true. And we're anti-Hezbollah, which is true. And we didn't like anything about Assad, who was pro-Russian, which is true. So let us rule Syria. And America and the European countries said like this, okay, no problem. But, you know, don't massacre the non-Sunni Muslims. That wouldn't be good. And the Syrian government always said, no problem. Don't worry about that. We have no intention of doing that. We'll have a state which is run by us, which Ein Hachanami is the ISIS, but since we're in charge, we'll treat the minorities okay. We'll show toleration. And the way they said it was, we've had civil wars here so long now, which is true. And there's been so much bloodshed in Syria, so everybody's tired of bloodshed. Now we want peace. And the world has accepted this, or fallen for it, depending how you touch it up. And that's the way it's been in Syria, you know, for months now. However, the problem is, you say one thing, you do another. So once they took over the government and knocked out Assad, and now they're in Syria as the rulers of most of the country, so it's not Pashut, because they've gone around and killed all these Alawites, which is a different group. It's not the Druze, but let's call it a group like the Druze. They're also Chayav Misa, Lishitas Islam. And there are all these massacres. And by the way, there have been massacres, you know, where they chop people in half and burn children and all the rest of it. They've done this. And the government said, that wasn't us. And they've done it to other groups, and the government said, oh, it wasn't us. And one of two possibilities, either the government, meaning Al-Jalani and his guys, don't want it to happen, but the people in the army are fanatical Muslims and they do it anyway. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that's really a secret plan and the guys talk out of both sides of their mouth and that way they can, plausible deniability. Oh, it was a massacre? I'm sorry, we didn't know that would happen. But meanwhile, you wiped out the village, so you don't have to worry about these people anymore. You get it? Israel has been watching this closely because maybe they'll do that to Israel. Yes, we want peace with Israel. Oh, we're sorry these guys attacked you, but we had nothing to do with that. This is the reason why Israel has bombed them every 10 minutes these last couple weeks. Because Israel's like, we don't trust you at all. If you mean peace, and you really mean it, and, you know, it'd be a full peace treaty, and you won't put, you won't help hostile people against us, and you won't put armed groups on the Israeli border. Because after all, if you have peace with us, why would you have army there? Why would you do that? You see? If you mean it, no, that's okay. Then, you know, HaKol Yavo B'Shalom, that's possible. But if you're talking out of both sides of your mouth, and the same way you're lying to the Druze, and you say, we're not going to kill you, and meanwhile you kill them, the same way you're lying to the Alawites, the Christians, the Kurds, and all the others, and say, we're not going to hurt you, but you do it, and you plan to do that with Israel, think again. Because, today Israel bombed the Damascus. I'm reading in the paper, okay? I think they bombed the palace, even. And they're sending a message, which is, don't take us for suckers. Don't take us for suckers. Meanwhile, the Israeli Druze, and I don't blame them a bit, they know exactly what the other guys want to do, the bad guys in Syria. They know that there have been a number of massacres in the last couple of days. They appeal to Israel, the government of Israel, to help them. What they're trying to is basically, listen, these guys, first they'll go after the Jews, then they'll go after the Jews, which is not false. And Israel is, Bibi has, all I can tell you is my opinion, Bibi stuck between a rock and a hard place. Clearly, Donald Trump wants the war in Syria to be over so they can start doing business there. And Trump wants to have the most optimistic view of the whole thing, that in the past you had a bad Syrian government, now you have a good Syrian government, and now we can move on and not have any wars, and America can invest there and do business, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And part of that is that Trump has been pushing Syria to make a peace with Israel. All that is good. And what about the fact that the Syrians are massacring all these other groups, which sounds like they're talking out both sides of their mouth? If I understand Trump, he's saying, yeah, I know, it's a problem, but, you know, it's all going to come out good in the end, and don't have any fighting over there. Okay? Let's get past it. And the government in Syria is talking about it both sides of the mouth. So they say, we have a ceasefire with them today. But on the same day, they say they have a ceasefire, they're going in and killing them. So that's how you talk in the Middle East. So the question is, you know, how should Israel react to this? Because they don't want to tick off Trump. And I get that. Believe me, I totally get that. They need him desperately. We do. Al pi derech hateva, we're lucky we have a president that's pro-Israel. You could easily have a president that's not. On the other hand, Israel doesn't want to anger its own citizens because the Druze, like in the current war in Gaza, if you follow, you know, the news, and I think If you're listening to me right now, you're probably a news junkie of Jewish news about Israel, as anyone else. You know, not a few of the 800 or 900 chayalim that have been killed have been Druze. You can see by the names, you know what I'm saying? Those they'll say, you know, Shlomo this, and Chaim this, and then you'll see, you know, Rafij al-Hajat or something like that. These are Druze. Including, by the way, I remember a major and a colonel. So these guys are fighting for Israel in Gaza. You understand? And historically, the Druze have been a very good unit in the Israeli army. They used to use them especially for border patrol and things like that, but not only. And believe me, the Druze are in the commandos, and, you know, these guys that went into Iran and did whatever they did, I know a little information, but I wouldn't share it on the podcast, include Druze. So notice they're part and parcel of the thing. Why would you alienate them? You get what I'm saying? Because all the guys in the army will say, the heck with Israel. Israel screwed me, so I'm not going to have any loyalty to them. As opposed to saying, Israel saved my relatives. So therefore, I'm going to be loyal to Israel. You understand? They stood with me when it mattered, so I'm going to stand with them when it matters. Israel has to take this into account. So you don't want to turn a positive fifth column into a negative fifth column. And like I say, if you're Israeli general or in charge of security, so watch this. You look at a map, let's say, for example, of the Galil, and you see all these Arab towns and villages. And I'm sure, the Shin Bet must do this. And you analyze who's living in all these towns because they have to have all this information. And you say, here's a town, let's say, for example, of 15,000 people. There are plenty of those in the Galil, believe me. Or even 50,000 people. And, okay, what's the population breakup? And you'll say, well, the town is a third, a third, a third. A third Palestinian Muslims, Arab Muslims, a third Arab Christians, and a third Druze. If you're Israeli army or policeman, you say this. Okay, I don't have to worry about the Druze, but I got to worry about the others. Do you get what I'm saying? Actually, they're like a pro-Israel fifth column in the middle of the Arabs. So Israel really cannot afford to alienate them if it's possible. So how do you thread the needle? How do you not tick off Trump and at the same time help the Druze, but do it in a way that will not hurt your chances of getting a peace treaty with the al-Jilani government, but at the same time, never knowing for sure whether he's full of it and is just saying he wants a peace treaty, but, you know, even with a peace treaty, he'll go against you because that's how they work in the Middle East, or not, or maybe it'll really turn out to be something good, in which case it would be amazing, and maybe he'll spend all of his time killing the Hezbollah, which would be great, and they're already talking about taking pieces of Lebanon away and, you know, in exchange for giving Israel the Golan, which wouldn't bother me, and they hate Iran, because it's a religious thing, you know. The Iranians are Shiites, therefore they're Chayv Misa, according to the groups in Syria. So it's an incredibly complicated hodgepodge, and I want to tell you something. You're going to laugh at what I'm going to say, but I don't mean to be funny. I've only scratched the surface. I mean, I could go on with this for 3 hours, actually 4 hours. I'm not going to do that. I'm just trying to show you just this nakuda about the Druze. And as you see, it happened before, and it will happen one day again. Because that's how they do business in the Middle East. From the purely selfish, narrow perspective, the best outcome for Israel and for the Druze, for both, if it was up to them, they would say like this. The Druze area should break away and make its own state in southern Syria. You understand? There are a lot of Arabs and Bedouin among them. Kick them out. Kill them. Do them what they would do to you. Or make a deal with them. You know, I don't know. Work it out. But then there would be a country called Druzia, but there's too few of them. What's it, like 500,000, 750,000 in southern Syria? How can a state like that survive? Now, it wouldn't bother me, and if they ever did that, if all the Druze got together in southern Syria, in that area, Jebel al-Druze or al-Suwayda, and they said, we now declare a declaration of independence, you know, like the American Declaration of Independence, when in the course of events it becomes necessary for two nations to dissolve the bonds that hold them together, etc., etc., we Druze declare, you know, our own country. It wouldn't bother me, and it sure wouldn't bother Israel, and I'm sure if that happened, and Trump was okay with it, Israel would have a defense treaty with them. because and they would be a buffer for Israel, and everybody would benefit. But it doesn't look like that's the way it's going. Now, you never know. You never know. And that would be, from Israel's point of view, the best case scenario. Let me put it this way. It would be the best thing by a million miles for the Druze. That's their dream. Okay? But, you know, will America go along with that? Will other countries go along with that? There's no reason that they shouldn't. And there's no reason, really, that Syria shouldn't be broken up into different pieces. For example, the Kurds should have their own country. They've always been denied that. And that would be the best thing for Israel. But, you know, are things going to go that way? Let's put it this way. Are things going to go that way? And would the others not attack them if they set up and made their own independent states? Woo! I think I've clouded your minds, flooded your minds with a lot of info. So I'll just close this down like a little info podcast. And again, thanks a lot to Morris Freeman and family. And again, as he said, we hope all those in Israel that need a refuah shleimah, and around the world that need a refuah shleimah, will get one. Especially, as I said before, those who are wounded and maimed and PTSD and all the rest of it. And the people in this country, they have health problems. And with that, I wish you all a good week.